Okay, so our last case for argument, United States versus Richardson, Mr. Wernhoff.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is David Wernhoff. I represent Mr. Jake Richardson, the third, the defendant, and the appellant. Very brief rundown of the facts. At about 12:47 a.m. on the morning of November 5th of 2009 in LaPorte County, Indiana, Mr. Richardson was driving a sick friend home when Deputy Dallas Smythe pulled him over for speeding. The deputy checked the license of Mr. Richardson, found it was a learner's permit, found it was valid. At about 12:54, Deputy Smythe realized that he wanted to do a canine pre-air search that he commenced at 0100 in the morning. In the meantime, other officers came to the scene. Marco, a canine and a passive alert dog, alerted twice on the passenger door, once on the driver's door. The deputy put the dog back in the vehicle. About 1:01, he opened the driver's door, asked Mr. Richardson out. Between 1:02:47 and 1:03:18, about 31 seconds, Deputy Smythe conducted a pat-down pursuant to Terry of Mr. Richardson's left pants pockets and right pants pockets. He pulled out a wad of cash from the left. When he went to the right-hand side, he said that he felt something hard, but it was unfamiliar. On two occasions, he said it was an unfamiliar item. So he then pulled it out and saw that it was something that looked to be a bag of contraband. At that point, then he put handcuffs on Mr. Richardson, and then he asked Mr. Richardson, what is this item?
So what exactly are you complaining about?
What exactly are we complaining about, Your Honor?
Well,
Your Honor, the thrust of our appeal is that the pat-down is fundamentally unconstitutional under Terry.
Well, I don't understand. What difference does it make? I mean, once the dog has identified drugs in the car, they're all going to be arrested, right?
No, Your Honor.
We disagree with that.
They're going
to say, you have the car driving recklessly. You have a guy with a learner's permit driving. It's kind of weird. And then you have the dogs saying there are drugs in the car. And what do they say? Well, okay, bye, on your way. No, they don't do that. That would be ridiculous.
No, Your Honor.
What would their superiors say to them?
The case law.
Well, the dog said there were drugs, and they were driving recklessly, and the guy had a learner's permit. But, you know, what the hell? We let him go.
Well, I think that the case law and the record is such, Your Honor, not to support
I don't see that. I just don't see that as a realistic option for these officers.
Well, the case law we submit, Your Honor, does give them the right to search once the dog
alerts. I'm not talking about the right to search. I'm talking about the right to arrest these people and, you know, and search the car for the drugs to follow up on the dog and search the person's everyone's pockets to look for drugs.
Well,
right?
We would submit
to dog says there are drugs in the car, you don't know whether they're under the seat or whether they're in people's pockets, so they've got to be searched. They're searching for drugs. They're going to find the drugs.
Your Honor, we would submit to you that the cases are such that can be searched, but the person can't be searched unless the dog alerts on the person. And that wasn't the case. When they searched the car, they did not find any contraband in the car. And the second, there's a two-pronged
right,
test.
And
the
that shows
could not be met.
Hey, look, the dog believes there's drugs. The drugs in the car. If they search the car and there are no drugs in the car, then the drugs are in someone's pocket, right?
Your Honor, this dog had two false alerts in the past. It was not trained for this kind of work. And that was on the record. And that was by an expert.
He did a good job in this case.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
He did a good job.
Well,
this
no, Your
is
Honor,
not
I think
a false
that
alert.
There would have been a question in the police officers' minds who didn't follow a lot of the procedures anyways. So there was a question that they would not have followed up.
Mr. Wernhoff, let me ask you about the pat-down and the detection of the drugs.
Yes, Your Honor.
First of all, how big a package are we talking about here? What was the weight of the drugs?
It was found to be crack cocaine. It was approximately, I think it was about 14 grams. So I can't really tell you the exact
a half ounce
size. Yes, sir. It's about
okay.
a half an ounce.
The district judge found it. I'm looking at, I think, page 13 of Judge Miller's opinion.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Found as a fact, as I read this, Deputy Smythe continued the pat-down and felt a hard object in a right side pocket that he believed might be a weapon. Now, if that's true, if that fact is correct, then it seems to me he's entitled to withdraw it, inspect it, and that's perfectly okay under the Constitution. Is there any basis on which that factual finding might be deemed clearly erroneous?
There's two times where the deputy said it was an unfamiliar item. And that seems to be inconsistent with a deputy who's got 12 years of being on the force and who must know about Terry and about Dickerson and that whole progeny of cases that says that there has to be something that you can actually feel. The word is immediately apparent that it is a weapon or contraband. Immediately apparent.
Okay, but it's not immediately apparent that it's not a weapon, right? That's what the district judge is saying there. And if that's right, the officer's entitled to investigate further, right?
I believe, Your Honor,
it's not a weapon.
I believe, Your Honor. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear you.
And to make sure it's not a weapon. Isn't the officer entitled to do that?
I think the case law requires him actually to be able to articulate what it is, determine what it is, describe what it is. He couldn't describe what it was. The cases that we cite in here that are from other districts, they talk about a box that was found on one person. And he said, yeah, it felt like a box of some sort. The officer testified to that. But there's no such testimony in this case as to that. Just hard. Well, I mean, I guess a penny could feel hard, Your Honor. Or maybe a bone if you're a bony person. You know, it could feel hard. Or a pen. I mean, obviously you feel a pen. Okay, that could be something.
Okay, let's go back to Terry and the reason why these pat-downs are justified, right, which is officer safety.
Yes, Your Honor.
Primarily in this situation. We know that if he recognizes it by feel as a weapon, he's entitled to remove it and proceed further. If he doesn't know what it is but believes it might be a weapon, doesn't the same rationale apply?
I would submit no, Your Honor.
So the officer has to leave mystery objects that might be a weapon in the pocket of the man he's trying to investigate. Is that the theory?
I think in these facts, he couldn't do that because he didn't articulate enough facts to say how it could be a weapon or the size of it or the shape of it or those kinds
of
things.
Was he asked those questions? I didn't see it in the transcript.
I don't believe he was asked those questions, Your Honor, but that's the government's burden.
It's a defense motion to suppress. And did the defendant testify at the motion to suppress?
The defendant did not, Your Honor.
But we've got a district court finding, believed it might be a weapon.
That's what the district court found, even though two times Deputy Smythe said it was unfamiliar and he didn't know what it was, in words to that effect. So there's a real, I think, evidentiary issue here that should be found in our favor, too. Also, I want to ask you to please take a look at Exhibit 5, which is the video, the MVR from the government. Exhibit number 5 is government's exhibit, and it shows the manner in which the pat-down was done by Deputy Smythe. We submit to you that he used the back of his hand. It almost looks like he was reaching in the pockets a lot of times. I've looked at this several times, and it looks like he wasn't doing a pat-down. I mean, if he was doing a pat-down, he was using the back of his hand. And the part of your hand that is the most, obviously most sensitive, is the palm of the hand. So if you're patting something down, you're not going to be able to make that kind of tactile determination as to what it is. And we submit to you that the type of pat-down he did was more like a general exploratory search.
That's the type of pat-down that the TSA is now using at airports, too. Back of the hand.
I can't comment on that. It seems to me it would certainly reduce your ability to detect what a weapon is. Because I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Oh, no, I agree.
Because obviously Terry Dickerson and the other cases say, you know, knives, guns, clubs, stuff like that is what you're looking for a lot of times.
Pepper spray? Mace?
I think if you feel a can like that, and a can could obviously have an aerosol. But I think the officer would have to articulate the factual basis for that and say, you know, that's an aerosol. Or I pat someone down. You know, I feel something that's long.
How about a rock?
I'm sorry.
How about a rock?
A rock, Your Honor, it depends how large it is. How big of a rock is it? I mean, you know, you got to feel
it. Isn't this cutting things a little fine?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Isn't this cutting things a little fine?
I think that, Your Honor, the rationale of Terry and Dickerson is such that by working with their rationale, which is plain view, you have to be able to articulate reasons why that could be a weapon.
Or contraband, you said.
Contraband could be clearly sensed through the hands. I'm not quite sure how, but it could be a pipe that people would smoke. Contraband, there's always residue in such a pipe, so that could easily be determined. Or could be. But we submit, Your Honor, this was an exploratory search. I'm running out of time. And under Terry and Dickerson, it has to be a strictly circumscribed search. On constitutional interrogations, we submit to you that after that the search was unconstitutional, he was then arrested unconstitutionally. Of course, he was never told he was under arrest. He just had the handcuffs put on him. We submit to you that could actually arise to be coercive action, definitely compelling when he's asked the question.
He wanted to talk. He wanted to make a deal. You couldn't shut him up.
He started talking after he got handcuffed, Your Honor. And we submit that that is enough to scare anybody.
He started to talk after the drugs were discovered in his pocket. Wasn't the handcuffs.
Well, Your Honor, the drugs
then
were discovered.
He knew the jig was up when they had the drugs.
Well, he just started talking.
Be realistic about it, right? He says, you know, you got me, right? He said, you got me.
And that was suppressed. You got me. And then after that, he just started
talking.
But the
point is, it's nothing to do with the handcuffs. You got me because you found my drugs, right? So he starts talking and get you more drugs. I don't know if he's trying to bribe them or probably not. He's trying to be recruited as a confidential informant.
Well, the officers noted he was extremely nervous. And so we submit that that is actually what Miranda is all about, is to try to keep him so he can exercise his free will.
Completely unrealistic. He wanted to talk because they had the goods on him. So he wanted to talk and make a deal. Clear, I think. Anyway, thank you.
All right, thank you,
Mr. Wernhoff. Ms. Kirchhoff?
May it please the Court, Emily Kirchhoff on behalf of the United States. The District Court found here that the pat-down search conducted by Deputy Smith was constitutional and did not exceed constitutional bounds. The government requests that this court affirm that decision. First of all, Defendant Richardson argues a couple of points that really don't have an impact on the Fourth Amendment analysis as to Officer Smith's purpose for conducting the search and the method of conducting the search. The Fourth Amendment analysis is an objective one, and under Terry, so long as the officer had a reasonable suspicion to believe that Richardson was armed, he could conduct a pat-down search.
But the problem is, on the video, the thing he removed from his pocket, the little package of drugs, which another police officer kind of holds in sort of in front of him, really tiny. I don't know how it could be mistaken for a weapon.
I believe that at this point, it was just the question that Officer Smith couldn't determine whether or not it was a weapon. He had conducted a pat-down of the pocket, felt the hard, unfamiliar lump, which he did testify to on page 20 of the transcript. And under this court's case law, he could then continue to pat down and determine whether or not definitively what was in the pocket was a weapon.
Did he say, I didn't know that I believed it might be a weapon?
He did not definitively say that he didn't know that it was a weapon. He just said he could not.
All right, wait. Let's try that again. I lost with about three or four negatives the way I asked the question. So, but did he say he believed it might be a weapon?
His testimony was that he could not determine what it was. It was an unfamiliar hard lump. He never confirmed or denied his belief as to whether it was.
Doesn't he have to have such a belief in order to justify under Terry the further investigation of it?
I believe that under this court's decision in Brown and Robinson, as long as it is reasonable for him to believe that it might be a weapon, he can continue to conduct the search.
Right. If he did he believe that? And what evidence is there that he did?
His statements at the suppression hearing were only that it was an unfamiliar hard lump. So we do not know. There is
But we've got the defense saying this is the government's burden to prove this, to justify this unwarranted search.
It's the government's position that so long as there is no definite determination that it is or is not a weapon, he is allowed to continue to conduct the search. And we know that it was an unfamiliar
Even if he doesn't believe it might be a weapon? I mean, that's the justification for this kind of, it's a big intrusion on somebody. The Supreme Court has told us that. And we all of us understand, I think, that how important the issues of officer safety are, but it's all based on safety here, not just a general search of the person.
Correct. And at this point, Officer Smith did not know whether that object in the pocket was a weapon or whether it was something as innocuous as a pen. So he was entitled to continue to search to confirm or deny those suspicions. I believe it was in the Brown opinion, this court cited an opinion from the Fourth Circuit, United States v. Swan, where they said that a better safe than sorry argument is important in this situation because officer safety is such a big concern. And likewise, now Chief Justice Roberts, when he was a judge on the D.C. Circuit, wrote an opinion that said that as long as it is objectively reasonable to believe that whatever...
Well, it doesn't seem objectively reasonable because it's so tiny. So if he reached into the pocket and grasped it, he's got his whole hand around it. So he knows it's a little thing. Maybe he knows it's drugs. Maybe that's what he should have said. Yeah, I knew it was drugs. Couldn't be anything else. That would be fine, right?
Yes.
So, but he didn't. So the weapon, it seems pretty important.
I believe that in Brown, the facts of Brown, it was the officer felt a small object the size of a ping pong ball. And this court held that it was okay for him to continue to search on the basis of something the size of a ping pong ball.
Well, I don't understand that. How could something the size of a ping pong ball be a weapon?
I believe in that decision, the officer thought that it could be the butt of a small gun.
What do you mean he didn't have his hand around it?
We don't have anything like that here, though.
It's one thing if you just feel part of the object. Yes, that's fine. But surely he had his hand around it because it's so small, at least from what it looks like. Video.
I believe Officer Smith's testimony was that he conducted the pat down and felt the hard lump, and then that is when he reached into the pocket. So when he first was conducting the pat down, all he felt
hard
lump.
Yeah. Okay. So the pat down is on the outside of the pocket.
Correct.
So after that, it goes in.
Correct.
That's a little better.
As to the voluntariness of the statements that Mr. Richardson made after the drugs were found, it is the government's position that those statements were completely voluntary, and Miranda does not apply to voluntary statements. Mr. Richardson was looking to increase his value as a confidential informant or possibly to notify the officers of the information that he had available to him, and that is why he began volunteering the statements both to Officers Smith and Boswell, who were there at the time the drugs were found, and also to Sergeant Short, who arrived later in the during the traffic stop.
Okay. Do you have more?
I was just going to conclude and ask the government respectfully requests that you affirm the decision of the district court.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you
very much, Ms. Kirchhoff. So, Mr. Wernhoff, do you have anything further?
Just very briefly, Your Honor.
Sure.
On the Robinson case, I just want to speak very briefly about that, and I don't want to spend a lot of time. There was a hard item that was detected by the officer when he was doing the pat-down. But this was a Terry pat-down. And then he went around, as you probably undoubtedly recall, he went around to the back of the vehicle, and there they opened the trunk, and there they find contraband, some illegal substance. At that point, then, the defendant, Mr. Robinson, is put under arrest. The search is resumed incident to arrest. So there's a bright line here. And that bright line, this honorable court, we submit, they got it right in Robinson. And the fact is, there may be some dicta that could be confused.
What about Ms. Kirchhoff's point that you're patting down, and, you know, Judge Kaney pointed out, apparently doing it with the back of the hand is accepted method of doing that. And if you're doing that, you just feel a hard object. You don't know how big it is or anything. You just feel something hard. So then you have to take it out of the pocket, right? So what's wrong with that?
Your Honor, because we submit to you that under Dickerson and Terry, it has to be immediately apparent, as we put in our papers.
Because as Judge Hamilton pointed out, if the officer is uncertain and thinks it could be a weapon, he doesn't have to be convinced that it is for obvious reasons of safety. So if all that his hand feels is the hard object, and he's not grasping it, so he doesn't know how small it is, he just feels hardness in his pocket. So then he has to reach in to pull it out to figure out that it isn't a weapon.
I think, though, under the facts of this case, Your Honor, it is such, with an officer with 12 years' experience having done this, which was Deputy Smythe, he needed to come up with a little bit more rationale to think he was a weapon, because all the cases talk about that.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Wernhoff. And were you appointed?
Yes, I was. Yes.
Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. And
you.
We thank Ms. Kirchhoff as well. And the court will be in recess.